call the meeting to order at 6 o'clock. We could have a moment of silence, please. Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Dennis Olson.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Harry Robinson.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson.
Here.
Paul Greeno.
Here.
Okay. First order of business is recognition and awards, and we have a proclamation for Bert Isaacson. And I will read the proclamation. Whereas Bert Isaacson has volunteered over 10,500 hours at the Blaine Food Bank, distributing food to those in need since its beginning nearly 50 years ago. And whereas the community has benefited greatly from Bert Isaacson's dedication and invaluable contributions in distributing food to those in need for nearly 50 years. And whereas Bert Isaacson's exemplary community service is an inspiration both locally and nationally, and whereas Bert Isaacson was recently recognized at the national level for his achievements with the Presidential Lifetime Achievement Award, and whereas Bert Isaacson is the first resident of Whatcom County to be the recipient of this national award. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Harry, Mayor Harry Robinson, and the City Council of Blaine, Washington, on behalf of the entire community, express our sincere gratitude to Bert Isaacson for his devotion to the community, and in his honor do hereby proclaim February the 28th, 2015, as Bert Isaacson Day. And as you are aware, on February the 28th, Susan Dalbeny will be here and be presenting an award to Bert on behalf of the nation. So we we'll hope all of you are going to be in attendance for that.
It's going to be up in, I think it's Stafford, isn't it?
Yes, it will be at Stafford.
In the old
at 10 o'clock.
Building.
Yeah.
So that's on the north side of the building.
10 a.m., and I think you all should have received an invitation by email. Okay, next item is audience participation. Is there anyone signed up for this evening to speak? Seeing none. Okay, written communications.
I don't have anything at this point. I think we did receive something, but I will provide that to the council.
Oh, good.
As soon as I can get
find it.
Okay.
Good. Okay, the consent agenda. For the consent agenda, we have approval of bills in the amount of $194,992.81. Approval of council minutes for February the 9th, 2015. Closeout phase one of the Vista Terrace sanitary sewer improvements. And number four, resolution 1661-15, surplus electrical equipment. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion carries 6-0. Next item on the agenda is council action items. The first one is approval of a bid for purchase of the robotic camera.
Well, hello again, Council. As you heard with Julie Hirsch's overview of the King Creek grant for the Drayton Harbor Samana Bay Water Quality Enhancement Grant, the purchase of a sewer camera was included in the grant. The budget that we had put in, the grant proposal was $55,000, and we're very pleased that we were able to get a bid for $53,978.75. I would also like to let you know that the resulting bid was after essentially having each firm do a test run, so we made sure that we got the features that we want to be able to get. And this bidder did a second follow-up with us after the bid just to make show us that it met all the requirements. And we felt that the most responsive bidder was QCES, their low bid at $52,978.75, and we asked that you award that this evening so we can get our camera.
Staff recommendation is that the City Council authorize the purchase of a sewer camera from Q's Inc. for the amount of $53,978.75.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Are there any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Hearing motion carries 6-0. Next item on the agenda is approval of the Boys and Girls Club Pavilion lease. Okay.
Thank you. So what we have tonight is a proposal for a new lease for the Boys and Girls Club. The purpose of updating the lease, there's two reasons. One is that the lease that was signed back 10 years ago is now due for renewal, and prior to that it was a 20-year lease. The second reason is that they're looking at building the pavilion, and so the city needs to add into the proposed lease agreement articles that do include any construction leasehold improvements and then the responsibilities between the two parties. So I provided the council tonight with a copy of the old lease that is due to expire, and a draft of the proposed lease. This draft is still being reviewed by the city, Boys and Girls Club, and also the city attorney. So what we're proposing is maybe some discussion regarding some points in the lease, and then possible approval based on the city attorney's ability, or not ability, but to go in and take a look at, you know, finalizing the terms. So in essence, and I tried to do a quick spreadsheet, we're going from a 5-year with the last contract of 10 years to a 30-year, which would include 2 consecutive 5 years with a 12-month prior notice, and that is something that the council might want to look at if they want to make it, council wants to make a change. It is for the Youth Activity Center. Current contract states Youth Activity Center. Proposed contract is the Boys and Girls Programs. I think the highlights in this are going to be both the right of the city to sublease, which was provided in the prior contract as control and use, allowing the city to control and use the property. The maintenance, building and grounds, The original draft was proposing that the Boys and Girls Club do that, but the city has always maintained the building and grounds and included utilities and janitorial service where funds are available. And the city is proposing to continue to do that. The one thing I didn't see in the draft is a termination clause. The prior contract allowed for 180-day notice. But I think in essence, with what we're looking at with the number of years, I can leave it up to the council to ask any questions and hopefully I can answer them.
Thank you, Sherry. I guess we've got sort of a multiple choice here. But really, you do not anticipate approval of the lease this evening, is that correct?
Well, what I was anticipating maybe was that the council, with the draft, I think it's mostly in place. There are some items in there that still need to be reviewed between the city attorney and Boys and Girls Club.
That would be recommendation number one.
Right. The council, on recommendation number two, can modify the terms. You could modify the years, any other items that you see fit. And the third option is to not approve the new lease. The lease, because they need to get funding for this, they are looking for a lease that they have in place to assist.
Okay, Dennis has a question for you.
Sherry, if you have a 30-year lease and something happens in terms of the senior center itself has moved out of that building, does that affect this lease at all so that the Boys and Girls Club were able to take over the whole area?
I would consider that to be an amendment to their lease, that they would be able to take over other portions of the building out there.
Paul?
What's the logic behind a 30-year lease?
That's a good question. Maybe Dave can answer.
So I think the logic behind it is that they expect to be able to provide long-term programs. The high schools across the street, which they expect to be in place for the next 30 years, so they're looking at a long-term. It doesn't necessarily mean we need to have a long-term. The last one was 20 years with 2 5-year renewals, which was 30 years. So we could go to a shorter term. I think the important thing is to recognize they want to be there long-term, and which follows up with the council member Olson's question about the senior program and the senior center. The building is called the community center, and it's shared by multiple users. So the building is going to be there for quite a long time. So the leases, I think, just provide a platform for that longevity. So if the council as a whole would like to have a shorter term, we're perfectly acceptable to that. And I'll just follow up with one comment. We thought we'd have this done today. We didn't know John Sitton was going to be out of town. He's down in Vancouver for a couple of days, so we apologize for that.
Okay, as a follow-up question or comment, I have no particular reason for doing it other than instinctively I think I'd prefer a shorter lease, perhaps in the order of 15 years.
So you could do a combination of a shorter lease, or we could come back in with the termination clause, and that kind of serves both purposes. If we need to terminate it earlier, we could. But I think the termination clause is something we'd probably need to take another look at.
Yeah, I think you need one of the two.
Charlie?
I kind of disagree a little bit with Paul. I mean, I don't see what the issue would be over 30 years. I mean, the city's in it. Schools in it for a long run. You know, why I can't figure out why we would want it. It would make any difference whether it was 10 years or 20 or 30, except if it makes a difference for their long-term plan or just coordinates with the school. I think it's a good idea. I think we should approve number one. So
let me follow up with that. Not so much from the city's point of view, from the Boys and Girls Club's point of view. They're looking for long-term funding, both for capital projects as well as ongoing operations and funding for their program. So the longer they can have leases and agreements, the more stable their basic platform of operation is. So that's why they're looking for long-term leases. They want to be able to say to their long-term benefactors, we're here for the long term. Okay, and would, so that's the basis of it, I think.
Would a termination clause satisfy their long-term relationships?
Yeah, I think we can craft it. We'd probably use the language from the old lease, because that's something we've already agreed to in the past.
I agree with Charlie that right now the relationship is just absolutely fine, and I have no reason to suspect that it will change. However, 30 years is a long time. So that just to protect parties down the road, I think I'd like to see either a shorter lease or a termination clause. And I think that the termination clause is probably the better choice of the two, because it satisfies the concerns that you put forward, and I think it satisfies the concerns that Charlie's raised.
So the termination clause in the current contract is 180 days. Is that something you're thinking of?
Again, I have no need to have it short. I would say that 180 days is, what, 6 months? Mm-hmm. Make it a year, 6 months, whatever is typical in these circumstances would be fine.
Good point.
So this is a $0 lease, correct? There's no...
The consideration for it is that this is a little bit different than other leases in that the Boys and Girls Club are going to be the primary owner of the building, the pavilion, because that's the way the funding structure worked out. So the lease is designed to provide that structure so the pavilion can get built and operated from. So the consideration for in the lease is that when the Boys and Girls Club is not using it, the city gets full use of it. So we don't have to lease it or sublease it or pay any money into the use of it. It's just, you know, so it's when we talked to John about having some consideration like a dollar or something like that, he said that just won't work. It needs to be more substantial. So this is what the consideration is about, is the city's full access use of the facility. And it's kind of a, it's an odd structure because it's not going to change how we're doing it now. It just makes it legal.
City will continue to own the building.
We'll own the Boys and Girls Club in the community center. The Boys and Girls Club is going to own by lease the pavilion until they're either done with it or there's another change. And then it automatically reverts to the city.
And is that what this is for, just for the pavilion or for both?
No, for the both, for the Boys and Girls Club.
But this says land lease.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they're really leasing the building, mm-hmm. the existing building.
Right. The ground lease allows the construction of the building.
Because when I think of a land lease, I think that someone is just leasing the land. But in this case, they are leasing the building as well.
They're going to lease the land and build a building on the land.
Okay, well, that concerns the pavilion. But what about the existing structure?
The existing structure is already in place, so when they do the ground lease, it already covers that space.
Oh, okay.
Any other questions?
Dennis, go ahead.
Would someone wanting to use those facilities, they'd still go through the city to rent?
So far, that's the structure we've had in the past. We haven't really had too many problems with how the buildings are. Both the senior side, no one really uses the Boys and Girls Club now, other than the Boys and Girls Club. So the pavilion was designed to be built and used by the community. So when the Boys and Girls Club are done with the center for the pavilion, then it would be available to rent, and very similar to the senior center. I would tell you, I've had conversations with Dana, and we've talked about kind of changing that configuration. What happens is they come to Sherry with a use permit. Sherry calls down to the senior program and has a conversation with them. So one of the things we've talked about is just allowing the senior program just to use that. They're already there doing things, and they might just be the ones that do the rental or the use agreement. Most of our users are nonprofits. The city doesn't make, this is not a profit center. Nearly everybody that I think we've talked to probably has used it at no charge.
We have birthday parties and memorial services.
Wedding reception.
Ready? Weddings.
Okay.
but it will be used very similarly. So the question is, do we need supervision? So far, the city hasn't used supervision. In knock on wood, you know, somebody hasn't come into the senior program area, the community center, and messed it up. We're very lucky. So we're proposing to do the same thing on this pavilion.
The Boys and Girls Club would have right of first refusal, so to speak, of the space.
Mm-hmm.
If they have a reason to use it even after Boys and Girls Club hours for an event or something.
They typically don't go much beyond it, but you're right. We wouldn't want to interfere with their use.
They might have a fundraiser or something.
They could,
and want to use it for an evening or a weekend
mm-hmm.
or something.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, their auction, annual auction.
Would there be any merit in formalizing this desire to have the Boys and Girls Club and Senior Center handle the external use rather than the city? I have no problem with, instead of having to come to Sherry, having a potential user deal directly with Dana.
Now, we'd like to go that direction. We just haven't taken the time to do that yet. We might even have done that with the pavilion not being constructed, because they're the main and primary users of the space.
Well, what I'm suggesting is that we may formalize that by putting it someplace in this agreement.
Well, I wouldn't do that.
We have a facility rental policy and procedure, and we have been working on the actual form. One of the things we do is we do charge a refundable deposit that has to be paid in advance, as well as any of the activities that are not-for-profit. Those get paid in advance, and then the city does have to receive money and issue refunds once it's been cleared.
Dave, do I understand correctly that they're anxious for us to get this done because they've got their deal going? It would seem to me that I'm happy with the way the lease is drawn up. If the council wants to have some type of termination clause, that's fine with me. But I think what we should perhaps try to work through tonight is to say that we approve the lease subject to whatever changes the council wants to recommend.
Correct.
And get this moving along.
Yes,
so
I appreciate
what I'd
that.
Like to see us get something done this evening so that these people can move along. I don't think number three is acceptable. I believe we should move this along, and if there's modifications required, let's put them on the table.
I think number one covers that because it says as drafted by the city attorney, so our concerns are going to be overdrawn. I have to bring in the change of form.
Right, there won't be any material changes except for the termination clause. Everything else remains the same. He's got a couple of things that he just wants to talk to Chet about, who's the attorney for the other group. So you're not going to, it's going to be more of a legal conversation than it is material to us.
Okay, Charlie, do you want to make a recommendation that
yes,
we approve it with the termination clause added?
Do I need to do that? Or
you just call it out as number one if you'd like.
Yeah,
with the termination clause.
Yeah, I move that we use number one with the termination clause added to it.
Second.
Okay, that motion has been made and seconded. Are there any further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Motion carries 6-0.
Thank you.
Thank you, Council.
Okay, next item on the agenda is Commission, Committee, and Board Reports.
The Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee meets next Tuesday, a week from tomorrow. We're finishing up the agenda this week and getting out probably on Wednesday. Should be a good meeting. We're expecting to have some updates by Blaine Connected, as well as some information on the retail study we talked about last week.
Steve, any on your committees?
No report for both of them.
Okay, Bonnie, on the Blaine Chamber of Commerce?
No report.
Paul, Whatcom Transit Authority?
Nothing in general interest.
Charlie, how about the Drayton Harbor Fish
Salvage? Yeah, they're having a meeting on Wednesday.
Okay. Okay, Dennis, how about your two committees?
There was some discussion about a new library. It's people are looking at a lot of them.
I'm going to mention our meeting that you and I have with the library director and the librarian.
Yeah, there was that was part of the discussion was to what we see as being needed. And what did you get? The most thing was the space.
Yeah, they're just kind of surveying countywide, really, the whole library system, and they were focusing on Blaine. And Dennis and I were at this meeting with the library director, and they just from community member standpoint, they wanted to get an idea of what our feeling was the pulse of the community as far as the value of the library and the future of the library and possible expansion and what we personally envisioned. One of the things I mentioned was I want to see a cafe. If you have a new library, I want to come and put a cafe in there. Have it maybe privately run, but I envision this Barnes & Noble kind of atmosphere. You know, you're sitting around your books and coffee just seem to go together. And making it more of a social meeting place in addition to all the library functions that they offer. So that was just something I, and other people have mentioned that, something similar. So anyway, it was about an hour-long meeting, and they just want to get a feeling of what we envision. And they definitely can use a bigger space, and that's where they're going to want to go. And that's a whole other topic as far as our involvement as a community and as a council, as far as a bond measure or whatever in the future.
So do we own the building that they're in?
We own the building.
There was one other thing. The Friends of the Library, I think their plan now is to meet with Alex's group on the, what's the term? I want to talk about, say, preserve the...
It's the Parks and Open Space Levy Committee.
Right. And I talked to Alex and Debbie, and they were going to make contact to see whether they need to make a presentation to that group, too.
And I will report on that in a moment.
Okay. How about the Senior Center?
They had breakfast. I left, but they said it was good.
Okay, Mr. Jones, would you care to talk about the Planning Commission and the Parks and Cemetery Board?
Yes, sir. First, on the Planning Commission, they're continuing their efforts with comprehensive planning work. And there'll be a meeting on Thursday primarily to discuss the Pipeline Road UGA area. We had a community meeting here last week, which was pretty well attended. We had about 20 people expressed a variety of issues, questions, and concerns. And it was mostly educational for them. Many of them have lived there for a long time or bought property relatively recently. And most of them didn't know they were in an urban growth area or what an urban growth area is. And it's been that way since 1997. That's been the UGA, so it's not a new thing. But it was really good because I think they're well prepared to participate in the meeting on Thursday if they want to. And on Thursday, the Planning Commission also is going to take up some old business that was tabled for a period of time at the request of some interested parties to rescind the West Semiahmoo and the Canary Hill PUD approvals and remove those from the Semiahmoo master plan so that land is ready to basically be master planned again and not take into consideration the large areas that go out into Whatcom County, unincorporated parts of the former UGA. And so that is on Thursday's agenda as well. Excuse me. Another item related to the Planning Commission is I wanted to just express to Council my appreciation for your reserve and not reading emails and not reading letters and understanding sometimes that you need to not participate in regards to the particular topic of the Islamic Center of Blaine. You were potentially the appeal board for that decision, as you are for many of the Planning Commission's final decisions. And so we asked you not to look at those items so that you would be able to just consider the record and what was formally submitted in any appeal. There was no appeal. The appeal period ended last Friday at 4:30. So feel free to read all those letters and emails if you wish. I can summarize for you, though. Basically, there were some folks who were really unhappy with the decision, and they generally expressed some concerns that the information that was presented to the Planning Commission in the staff report was not fully accurate or was not fully disclosing some of the items. A great deal of that had to do with the comparison of the Islamic Center's website and what was in the staff report. We don't report on what's in the website. We don't report on what, you know, people are proposing. We report on what they've applied for, of course. And so that was the primary source of difference of opinion, if you will. But nonetheless, they were concerned about parking and traffic primarily. I will say the meeting was excellent. The Planning Commission did a great job. There were a lot of people here, which is always good to see, whether they're in favor or against something. It's good to see politics or public process in action, democracy in action. Most of the people who had actually met the folks at the Islamic Center and their neighbors there came and spoke in favor of them, which was kind of heartwarming. And a lot of other folks spoke about their concerns. The main issue was related to traffic and parking, as I mentioned, and a lot of that had to do with the idea of the call to prayer five times a day, as is common in Islamic customs. The reality of that situation is most everyone has a job, most everyone has a life that extends beyond their place of worship, and the folks who presented for the center did explain, we're not able to drive there five times a day. One of the prayers is before sunup. We roll out of bed, pray, and roll back into bed and go to sleep. We don't drive to the Islamic Center to do that. So a lot of it had to do with kind of perception. But nonetheless, the conditional use permit and the variance were approved, and you can feel free to look at all of that information. I do have some information on the Park and Cemetery Board as well. Wanted to let you know that the Marine Park Playground purchase order has been completed by the city, and that is moving forward. We had to do a little bit of what we call value engineering, which is finding ways to save money on some items to be able to pull that trigger in a timely manner and make sure that the project can be on its way. Fundraising is still ongoing, and money still continues to come in on pretty much a daily basis. Over $52,000 has been raised, and we have made some decisions on things like we won't put in benches or we won't put in picnic tables immediately if necessary, but the playground itself, the primary facilities like parking and sidewalks, that is all already funded. So we're hoping that the fundraising picks up to the point that by the time we're ready to put in picnic tables, the money will be there. But nonetheless, the project is complete without those. That was really nice to see. We finally have received our Army Corps of Engineers permit for the beach restoration project. That was in the works for a really long time. The Corps is a big bureaucracy, and they have been exceptionally slowed down, from what I understand, by the OSO landslide issues. So we finally have our permit, and hopefully we'll be working with Public Works here in the next couple of weeks to basically pull that off. We have until the middle of March to complete the work because there is a fish closure. There can be no in-water work done after March 15th, and then it doesn't open again until like the end of the summer. So we waited a really long time to get our permit to find out we have about 2.5 weeks to do the project. Fortunately, we're pretty well prepared to do it. And then finally, the Parks and Open Space Levy Committee has had three meetings, mostly related to understanding financing, and they are in the beginning stages of creating a list and a ranking system of what are the kinds of things that might like to be seen in Blaine, and they are reaching out to a variety of different organizations like the Live Friends of the Library, Jim Jorgensen has been an advocate for the Marine Resource Center. Some of those kinds of things that have been sort of in the works for a while and might be candidates for consideration as part of the levy package. The library would be primarily related to the idea of moving the library to a waterfront location so that it would be a view preservation, if you will, because all of the public would be able to have the use of and access to a waterfront public facility. In any case, there are a lot more items than there is likely to be money, so they have their work cut out for them to find the really key projects that are worthy, and they're trying to balance that across the board. So there'll be at least a couple more meetings before they're anywhere near having a list. You'll probably hear some more about that. Any questions on any of those items? Thank you.
Next item is the Small Cities Caucus. There was a meeting, I believe, last week. The main topic on the agenda was the new jail, and they're looking for our support by the end of March. The county council will be willing to put on a special meeting for us if we would like one. They have a slideshow that they could present, and we probably need to set that up if that's what we would like to do. The other item is that they're anticipating that there will be a public or a committee of interested people from the public. And if there is anyone that we know who would be interested in being on a committee of individuals supporting a new jail, we should let the county council know the name of an interested party. So if you know of anybody that's a big supporter of a new jail, be sure to let me know and I'll contact the county council. The other item that I talked to Bill Alfo about was that perhaps maybe we would, because this is going to be a topic that a lot of our citizens are going to have an interest in, particularly when we're going to be asking them for more tax dollars, that perhaps maybe a group of us would be interested in taking a tour of the jail so that we could get a true feeling of exactly what the problems are. And apparently it's pretty dreadful. But I'd personally like to see it myself. So I've asked Dave if he could maybe work with Bill Alfo and see if there's an opportunity for us to do a visit.
He's happy. I did talk to him. He's happy to do that.
Okay, good. Whatcom Council of Governments, next item. I don't have any report. And the North Whatcom Fire Update, Chief Hollander.
Good evening, Council. Shared a couple things with you tonight. First of all, our monthly chief's report with all our statistics and lost numbers. And on the second page, you can see the City of Blaine, we had 76 responses in January and one response out to the San Diego area. Kind of highlight those because I know those would be the two areas you'd be interested in.
Okay.
And then also we published this week and the last week our annual 2014 report, which is great reading. And I gave everyone got a copy, and I'll make sure Raven gets her personal copy tonight.
Very impressed. Very impressed.
Still wiping up the tears.
It's heartbreaking. Yeah. So with that, I'll answer any questions you might have.
Questions for the chief? None.
All right, thanks.
Okay. Dennis.
One more comment. The County Review Committee, there was an article in the paper about funding for senior centers and Meals on Wheels, and I don't know what all is involved in that. And I spoke with Dana today, and they apparently are going down and meet with that group. They're pretty concerned that if the funding goes away, they're in trouble. So I'll kind of keep an eye on what's going on and report back. Richard May is on that committee. And I suggested to Dana that you might talk to him and put two words in there.
And Goldsmith. When's the next meeting of that group? Does anyone know?
I don't have the dates.
I wasn't able to attend the last meeting. I noticed that they have some mention in the newspaper when the meeting starts. So that'd be interesting to go and see what they're up to. Okay, the next item on the agenda. Steve, you have something to stick with? Comment?
For the chief. With the bridge being closed on Peace Portal, during the construction stage. The people on West Road and stuff, how will you respond to those? Will that come from the Bridge Bay Station, or which way do you think you'll go on that?
West Road, probably coming.
Yes. Normally now, but with the bridge closed.
We're going to need to adjust our responses to the rest of the closures, so it's appropriate that way. Our larger trucks already have to go around. They're not allowed to go away from it. Okay, our ladder truck, holding on, and only spawn our ladder truck over there on emergency. We don't need that at the place for many years. So the ladder truck is an ambulance. The first day calls for ambulance calls, the second day ambulance for the city.
Okay, department reports, public works.
Hello again. So I wanted to give you a brief update on my meeting last, or the trip last week to the Association of Washington Cities City Days Conference. They actually had gave one of these to all of the members that came, and then when everyone walked into the legislative building together, the people can see the level of representation by the city. So I thought it had some good impact, and we actually saw on the way out, Dave Wilbrecht went with me, on the way out we were actually seeing a lot of counties wearing yellow ones. So it was a coordinated thing. I met initially with the education committee, and they talked a lot about what they're currently doing in terms of getting education and outreach. And, there seemed to be a lot of interest by the council members and mayors that were there to get more bite-sized pieces, having an all-day training or even an hour training if it is on a webinar or something. Is difficult, so they actually talked about maybe making even like a DVD kind of half-hour tidbit that is something that we can then bring as like on a day that doesn't have a study session or something like that, to kind of go over and reiterate some of the things affecting you and your daily life. And then, interestingly, the Department of Commerce is starting a whole education campaign, and they're kind of doing it on their own thing. One of my comments was, you know, we'd really like to get an update on that before it gets released, so that maybe we could find some input as the education committee. So that was kind of my contribution this time. It was also just a lot of getting to know people on the team. And then other highlights were actually meeting with Representative Fies and Senator Erickson. Senator Erickson was particularly interested in the information that we brought to him about the Spirit Coalition. So if you will recall, kind of middle to late last year, you authorized us for a little under $1,000, joining with a coalition of other cities that were hiring a lobbyist to advocate for more state funding for sewer systems and sewer debt. And Senator Erickson already was pretty dialed in on the other topics that we brought to him, so he really was very interested in that, and also not so much new money. Some of the ideas that we brought to him that were kind of specifically Blaine's ideas, since our issue is primarily debt, not necessarily new funding, which is an issue for some of the other cities. To potentially petition the state to either forgive some of the debt. We have about $1.3 million in Department of Ecology money that is for the water reclamation part of the project. It's about $84,000 a year, if I'm correct. And then we also have so if that were forgiven, that would be a nice little chunk of change that would either go back to our ratepayers or go towards capital projects for rehabilitating our sewer system. And then the other idea was potentially with the Public Works Trust Fund debt, which is our biggest loan, about $24 million with a payment of about 1.5 a year. It's only a 20-year loan, reduce our payment about $200,000 to $300,000 a month, depending on what mortgage calculator you use. So those are things that kind of excited Senator Erickson, and I have since provided further the lobbyist request our story. They wanted a little morsel of some of these stories. So I spent some time on Friday, and I drafted a one-pager that is just plain story of why it happened, what we ended up doing, and the amount of debt that we have. But, the coalition is going to be bringing that forward, and Senator Erickson had asked us to write some language for some of the ideas that we have, and I essentially forwarded that to the Seward Coalition's lobbyists, because I don't really feel like writing up a bill is my forte. Mr. Bies was really interested in I-274 interchange. We brought a nice packet of information about that, and his slant was that we really should be campaigning the Port of Bellingham as that we have a trucking port here. And he was really energized about the possibility of a city-state port-private partnership that might be able to dial that interchange in, and possibly something even in coordination with Doug Connolly's property. Because we have the planned improvements on Hughes, we've got the freeway coming through there, and maybe some kind of interim measure even if the 274 doesn't go ahead. So that was kind of the kicker from the conference. Other questions on that? That was like a mouthful. I'll just go through my normal project updates there. Public Works Committee, Advisory Committee, deadline is this Friday. I did ask Paul Atchison when he asked me for topics for the Semiahmoo Resort Association board meeting last week, if he could bring that up and remind people of that, like some representation from there, of course. the electric comp plan, which is kind of the fundamental first piece toward the rate study that we want to do this year, we're soliciting for qualified consultants, and that closes this Wednesday. So those are two pretty major things coming through this week. We have a part-time office technician position that is being advertised internally in the city. That is how we've decided to address the retirement of Sherry Tessa. It's going to be more focused on records and financial than what Sherry was doing, more of the conservation when she left. So we're kind of reshaping things a little bit in public works. And then the groundskeeping contract is out to bid until March 3rd. Now, I have gotten a couple of calls and emails and a letter in support of the Sturgills, and you might also be hearing from people about that. I just want you to know that the Sturgills were a big part of how it was scoped. We used their feedback for how we put this bid package together. They've been in communication with us all the way through the process, including talking to Mr. Sturgill last week right before it went out and hit the paper. That's really the most that we can do. This is a public work, and therefore needs to be competitively bid. If they bid and they're low, we will also, of course, be recommending award to you for them. But there's no other special anything that we could do and be in compliance with state law than what we've already done. So if you get questions from people about that, feel free to refer them to me, and I'm happy to answer them.
How long is that contract for, Lucia?
Well, the current contract. The current contract was 1 year, and we renewed it for a year.
Oh, so is it just done every year?
Since I've been here, we bid at the end of 2012, so we used that contract for 13 and 14. That contract expires the first part of March. So we have shaped it a little bit to give us a little bit more ability, especially now that we don't have the money from Washington anymore. Highways, we were bringing on somebody every summer to work on that. kind of gives planning and public works a little bit more ability to adapt by requiring hourly rates. So we've restructured it in a way that'll allow us to respond better to demands as they come along and variations of weather. One of the Sturgill's comments to us was, well, the way you have it written, it tells us that we have to do this so many times a month, even if it's not necessary. And that's true, you know, and so we took that into account. Instead of saying you need to do this so many times a month, that we said you need to do this to this standard. We don't want to see grass more than 3 inches as a standard. Mm-hmm. It's just an example. Instead of saying we need to mow every other week. Well, maybe in October they might need to start mowing again, but maybe in August and September they didn't need to mow at all.
Yeah.
So those are some of the little tweaks that we did. With more performance-based, we actually used a lot of our city manager's past experience working for parks departments as a tool for bringing up this and creating this performance standard. We spent a lot of time kind of reformatting it, and we're looking forward to good bits.
Is 1 year contract standard for landscaping? I mean, can it be longer?
It varies.
Than 1 year?
We do have a renewal clause in it, so provided we don't change the method of measurement or the scope more than what's already allowed.
So much time spent every
it
year.
Is.
So to put it out for bid and to
right.
go through the process. Why not make it for 2 or 3 years?
Right. Well, we want to have, you know, kind of like your conversation with the lease. You want to weigh out if it's not
sure.
working.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
The contract is currently written for a year with renewals every year up to three, I think is what we put in.
Okay,
there.
Well, that. Okay,
so,
well,
and that allows for
it,
a CPI adjustment, but everything else is the same.
Okay.
So, again, so what if, you know, costs for one thing are more than the CPI? You can't really wheel and deal. So, that's
okay.
About the cemetery, I mean, we went through the thing about doing it every 2 weeks, which doesn't cut it, especially since we start mowing now.
Right.
So the new contracts are going to be better than that.
Yeah, what we ended up doing, we called it level of service A, B, and C. And so we focused on the city center as our level of service A, and the cemetery, along with the vast majority of parks, if they're not in the city center, are the street end parks, is level service B, and then it gets more rustic
so
level
when do
service
I have to start
C.
mowing?
I'm sorry?
So when do I have to start mowing?
Tomorrow.
Yeah, I
we already did.
Had to mow at home myself.
Dennis.
Yes,
sir. How do you determine a budget for this kind of a contract? How do you come up with what it's going to cost? I mean, before you had a amount that was set and how you spent that, but I don't understand how you do this with this system.
So what I did was there's seven different funding sources for the existing contract between park, cemetery, street, water, sewer. It's crazy, but it is seven different sources. Oh, and the court, so they are sources. What we asked them to do was estimate, based on the level of service that we required, estimate your number of hours, provide the hourly rate, and the cost. So they will be allowed up to that maximum. And that way, if that's looking like it's coming in heavy and something else is coming in less, it gives us the ability as project managers to put those funds elsewhere if we need to put those funds elsewhere. And then we also put in a believe it was 100 hours of other unanticipated work. So that would be the only part as we're moving forward with the contract that we won't have a fund source tied to. Because for every other one, all the other seven sources, we created a bid item. Like it was before, but before it was lump sum. So we had no ability to make any adjustments because that was their lump sum rate. Their, you know, other than doing some side negotiation, which is not really very cool. So I think between the way that it's broken out in the bid, they're having the flexibility of using their hourly rate, so they're going to be confident in what they're bidding. I think it's going to be much, much easier to administer.
But the hour that you're assuming you can allot so many hours for?
What we're asking them is to estimate their own hours for the work that is described by each fund, and we've provided lots of maps for locations and things. The only part that is estimated is my own, I put in an extra line at the bottom that just says 100 hours, your hourly rate, so that if we do have a special project or something that's already set up to do that, then in that case we would be working, if it's a park project or a storm project or whatever, that fund manager, whether it's Michael or I, we'll need to make sure that those hours and in that fund are available.
And when are these bids due?
March 3rd.
March 3rd.
I guess, you know, whether that could be in here forever and don't reach you and Sue forever, but Sue puts so much extra. I mean, she never got paid for so much stuff that they've done, both of them, through the parks and stuff. I just, you know, I don't know how you quantify that.
Well, we know that they are outstanding community citizens, and we certainly did everything that we could to be inclusive. And they recognize that this is competitive, and they feel very confident that they'll be a little bit. So,
I mean, it's hard to figure out.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Raven. Oh, Steve, go ahead.
Raven, I have a concern with the entrance and exit to Blaine on the north end of town. We, a lot of times we talk about the south end of town, but I think most of the land is state land. But if you walk that area by Big Al's and through, we've got alders growing up, and on the other end, the blackberries are getting to the point where you can't see the water. Is there any pressure we can put on the state, or how do we go about doing that to get it cleaned up?
Well, our state is very fond of pawning their maintenance of various things upon us, but I could certainly send out an email. We did include the roundabouts, fairly significant, at least affecting any of the site distance around the roundabout with this contract. Okay.
It seems like we should actually just send pictures to the Erickson and these guys to say, this is the entrance to America from Canada. This is our state entrance. This is our state highway entrance. And down Olympia, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's actually gorgeous what they've done on and off the freeway.
Didn't I say something along that line? I kind of got a rebuff. I didn't want to create a negative image, so I didn't argue the point, but I did bring it up last week.
Raven, are there any plans to doll up the area in the front of this building? I'm not looking for us to do a major job, but are we going to plant stuff to make it look a little more interesting?
We don't have any. I mean,
there's nothing in the budget.
Yeah, it's not anything that was specifically identified. We do have a one-time dress-up in front of Lighthouse Point, because that's gotten incredibly overgrown with all the over-irrigation that we've had to do. And then we did a kind of a one-time cleanup in front of the library, because that's also gotten really overgrown. And I think I reported at the last meeting our intention is that Public Works will go in and at least pull what we can of the bamboo, and then we will have this contract kind of make sure it stays gone, and then ultimately replant that. But even like the ivy and some of the height of the roadies, that's all being addressed as a one-time, you got to do this much. In terms of adding new vegetation, we do have the ability to, you know, identify some landscaping areas, and maybe we could talk to the school or something like that. But
right in front of this building here, I mean, I don't think it costs a huge portion just to go in and plant some stuff, so in the summertime you've got some color. And
mm-hmm.
I think area you could plant tomatoes.
Yeah. Mr. Robinson, do you mean out by the parking lot and the sidewalk when you say right in front of this building in the landscape strip?
Yeah. You know, I mean, if there's
And what about Flagstaff?
I don't know.
And the sign, and I don't mean to make light of it, but there was a list of items, all three of those, the flagpole, the sign, and the landscaping, were all on the original proposal for the move to this building, and they were all cut due to budget, and we've never circled back around and allocated funds during our budget process for that. So we don't, there isn't anything in the budget.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, for $100, you could buy, you know,
Yeah, that kind of thing. Well, we need to bark it, you know, kind of freshen it up. It's not a whole lot of money. You think the bark would be considered? I mean, you said the bark, the three inches and all. Yeah, I think bark is included.
You know, bark, yeah. I mean, to me, it looks like...
Looks neglected.
Neglected, yeah, it's perfectly...
We'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I think it could be addressed, you know, it's our building. I mean, we're asking other, you know, we're asking other people to do stuff about their building. I think we should be setting an example. And I, from my perspective, I don't think it's going to cost. I mean, we don't have to bring landscapers in to do it. But put some bark down and buy some basic, you know, plants.
Yeah, a few shrubs.
A few shrubs.
I think that one tree could come out.
Yeah, you know.
We will see what we can do.
Okay.
Thank you.
We would be most appreciative. Mr. Jones, would you like to do the community development services?
Are we going to catch the sunset?
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did catch it.
It was fantastic.
Thank you. Need to think of that every time.
Yeah.
So this is the year-end development report for 2014, and a pretty typical format. I do have the slide presentation. It's not in your packet, but I do have it, and I'll give you that in a moment. Our residential building permits, we are, there were two new single-family permits in the fourth quarter, and a total of four duplex units, so two duplexes, bringing us to a total of 16 residential units in 2014. That number is low, and it compares to 39 units for last year in 2013. And what that looks like is this, when we look over about a decade. And honestly, what I would say is the artificial increase that we created in 2012 and 2013 has now come back to give us an artificial decrease in 2014, because 2014 was the first year that fees applied. So people got ahead of those fees in 2012 and 2013, but didn't have that same impetus. My opinion, and it's just my opinion, is we would have had the same 98 units or so, whether that happened or not. They would have happened probably in a different range and over a different period of time, but in any case, we have that low spot. From conversations with builders and developers, it sounds like we'll probably be back more to 30 or 40 this year, just from initial consultations, if that's coming around. As far as the most expensive, or not, I shouldn't say most expensive, but the highest valued construction project, it was the remodel of the Semiahmoo Resort. One of the pieces of that remodel was the new portico, but that certainly wasn't $1.6 million worth of construction. There was a whole lot of work done inside the restaurants and other spaces. And that was our biggest project last year. Project valuation is not what the developer spends on it, but what it's valued at through the valuation process, which is typically lower than what they actually spend. They probably, you know, spend 15 or 20% more than that at least. New construction was kind of scattered around Blaine residentially, but interestingly, there was sort of a cluster of commercial development, the Red Stars. Three of them are Edeline, the tenant improvement above the Black Park Steakhouse, and the 24/7 parcel reconstruction, and then the fourth one being Semiahmoo Resort that I just mentioned. So there's kind of a cluster in downtown Blaine. That's where most of the commercial construction happened. Although there were tenant improvements in the industrial area, Border Cargo, Bioplex, Nature's Path, and STEM Enterprises. STEM is actually one of the bigger projects of the year. There's about $8 million in construction in Blaine. Again, that's the valuation. It was a little bit more residential than non-residential. It's often more, there's often more non-residential than residential, and that kind of bounces back and forth depending upon where the boom is. Last year, we had about $11.8 million. So the even, again, total is down a bit, but thankfully, the non-residential construction, the commercial construction that we had, helped bring those numbers up. Even though the residential unit count was as low as I mentioned, we still didn't have a huge reduction. It did, of course, as you might expect, result in less fees collected, and building fees and land fees are always very hard to estimate because we never know what one person's going to do from year to year, and we don't have enough projects really that when one is missing or two extra happen, they don't adjust the average quite a bit or throw the numbers out. So every year, Jeff and I have a little bit of a conversation about, well, what should we put in there this year? And we're always trying to be conservative, but it's kind of a wild guess to some degree, simply because it varies so much from year to year. Land fees, which are land use permits, those are up 24%, but it's not a huge amount of money, about $4,000. Overall permits, there are a wide range, even though we only had 16 residential units, there are still 62 building permits because those can be all manner of things, commercial construction, residential remodels, and such. And then there are, of course, always other items like mechanical plumbing and demo. No demo in the fourth quarter, but there were 12 demo permits during the course of the year. That typically is a whole structure when there's a demo permit, so a garage or a home or a whole building. Total number of inspections is still right up there because with all of those building permits come a variety of miscellaneous inspections. So 629 inspections between Cliff and Ed this year, which is quite a good number. STEM Enterprises was our second largest construction project. This is a marijuana grow facility, and it is the one down by West Road on the south end of town. Looks pretty much like that today, and is on its way to being open. That was originally going to be a remodel, but they basically had to tear down to the bare ground to build up because of the condition of the building that they were moving into.
Where's the city limits? Is it just beyond that building?
The city limits is just beyond that building. In fact, the city limits almost wrap around it on three sides. West Road is in the county. The terminus where West Road loops around to Peace Portal is in the county. And then Peace Portal is in the county. But north of that, where the creek is the connection to the city. So there's just like this little peninsula of city land on that side of the creek.
That's going to be a growing facility?
The marijuana growing and processing facility.
What kind
of
taxes?
So we get some electricity?
Yeah, we are their electrical provider and their water, and their water provider. And their taxes will be for property taxes, just like anyone else. And the state is looking at changes to the distribution of the other excise taxes on marijuana, but there's no sales tax on that because it's a wholesale problem.
Yeah.
So there's only sales tax at the actual retail sale point.
Mm-hmm.
They, in addition to growing, they will also be processing products. I don't know. There were 13 administrative permits processed in 2013. That compares to 19 administrative permits processed in 2014. So that is up a bit. As you can see, the vast majority of the permits that come through from the land use perspective, short plats and such, are coming through staff, and you never see those. Only one of the permits in 2014 was actually due to come to council, but it got basically terminated by the applicant at the planning commission stage, and that was replatting a portion of the Cardew Steam project out in Semiano so that they could do a different mix of housing units. So that just stopped. You would have seen it, but you didn't. Nonetheless, it still came in, was vested complete. We received the fee. There were four type 2 permits at the planning commission. Most of those were things like conditional use permits, variances, and shoreline permits. And they are all over the but the light blue ones are type 2 projects, so planning commission or city council. The darker blue ones are administrative things like site plan review, short plats, lot line adjustments, those things that we process internally and never go to a public hearing. And then finally, the third largest construction project in 2014, which almost seems like it was a long time ago already, was the Edeline project that was a little over $500,000 in valuation. And boy, I was there, I can't remember when it was, Sunday, I think, to get a
close
nice cream. So, yeah, it must have been Saturday because they're closed Sunday, to get an ice cream cone. And when I drove up, I thought, oh my gosh, is that a line around the corner? It was actually just people standing around eating ice cream in sort of a line, but I almost didn't even go in because there were so many people. The business is apparently just absolutely booming. They sell a lot of milk and a lot of ice cream out of that store.
That's great.
And then Raven has just a little bit of information to tack on to the end, and then if you have any questions for me or for
you guys have seen way too much of me, so it's just one slide. Voila! One thing that we've been reporting to you, at least in our mid-year and then at the end of the year, is our number of service requests. So we're at 112 so far for the first 3 months of this year. You can see a lot of those in the street. I'm guesstimating that a lot of that was the heavy rains and things washing down and, you know, leaves blowing, blocking drains and whatnot. That it does seem a little bit out of character to have that much in the street. So that's my one story.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Michael, when you report on duplexes, does that include the paired housing as a duplex housing?
It wouldn't, actually. The paired housing would be single family residential units. So the
I was looking at that map and I was trying to figure out where those would look like they were up around 6th Street.
Yeah, they are right above the sea on Central. And I think those building permits were issued, but the duplexes weren't built. Yeah.
So
these are issued building permits?
Is the one by the inland where the paired houses were built?
The one by the what?
By the inland on the Central.
Oh, the paired housing units that were built just south of B Street, I think they're on E and 7th or E and 6th, right around there. Is that what you're thinking of? There are two pairs.
West.
Pardon me?
Yeah, there are three of them put in.
Bob Drake
built
them. Those are the ones that I'm thinking of. Maybe they're the same ones that you're thinking of. Those were built, I think they were finalized, and they were issued in 2013.
Oh, okay.
So they don't show up on this, I'm pretty sure. And they were two pairs, so a total of four single family units.
There are three?
I don't think so.
There's three buildings out there.
Okay. Well, in any case,
well, one's a private business.
But they
is
were,
it?
But they were last, they were issued in 2013 and completed in 2014. And then the other thing that I would just mention, you know, related to these numbers, as I said, it looks like things are starting to pick up a little bit. We are expecting, as we've had conversations with Watkins Gadget Housing's development manager, that they expect 8 or maybe 10 new homeowners to start construction on their units in the Drake Reach subdivision in the spring. So that would literally be half as many as were built all of last year. And with the few that have already been issued, we're off to, with that happening, we're off to a pretty good start. That's one of the reasons why it looks like things are going to be better this year.
Any other questions? Is that Jeff about the Finance Committee? About the Finance Report.
The budget man to give his report.
There's no money for landscaping.
So I'm going to present
to donations.
The 2014 year-end financial report, and you have the report, the full report in your packet. So I'm just going to present on some of the highlights tonight. So as you recall, in the mid-year of 2014, the general fund had higher than anticipated one-time revenues. And you as the council approved and allocated most of those one-time revenues to the general fund reserve. As you recall, the general fund reserve had been below target for a few years, for some time. So aside from those one-time revenues, I would say that the 2014 year-end trends indicate an even course, really with no dramatic upswings or downswings. So beginning with the general fund, just the general fund overview, revenue came in at within 100.87% of the budget. So it was almost 1% above the total estimate. So we were pretty darn close there. And then our expenditures were within 99.64% of the budget.
And you're getting good at this.
And then looking at our operating fund balance, so that's that minimum 30 days of expenditures that we need to have in our general fund, and that's by our policy. We were above the target by about $16,000. And then the reserve, we are, after transferring that one-time revenue to the reserve, we're about $15,000 under our target. So it's in pretty good shape compared to what had been in previous years. And then looking at sales tax revenue, the actual was 3% above the budget estimate. And then compared to 2013, it was 4% higher. So, you know, we hear in the news about the Canadian dollar. You know, what the question that's in our minds is, what type of impact is that going to have on sales tax revenue? And I think it's really a matter of to what degree. Because we still have, you know, the package deliveries, and I believe that's going to continue to be a major driver behind the sales tax trends that we see here locally. So I don't really anticipate that's going to change really that much or thematically. But that's something that we're going to certainly have to continue to monitor to see what type of impact could happen as we move forward into 2015. So our general fund revenues compared to 2013 were actually up by 6.55%. And again, as I mentioned, that was largely due to those one-time revenues that we discussed back in the mid-year, such as court revenue and then grant dollars for some public safety equipment. And then looking at our expenditures, they were, compared to 2013, they were up by 21%, but as you recall, 2013, we drastically reduced our spending compared to the spending based on the budget that was approved. And in mid-year 2014, as I mentioned, funds were transferred to the reserves. So that two factors behind the increase there. Then looking at our utilities, the electric fund, revenue from sales, was 98.98% within the budget estimate. And then compared to 2013, our revenue was up by 4.59%, almost 5%. And I would say that the trend, what we're seeing here, is obviously higher consumption, and I think that that's going to, obviously will continue as we add more customers to that utility over time. And then our expenditures were 92% of the budget and 13% higher compared to 2013. And that we talked about the maintenance and operations budget continuing to increase. That's the reason for having a electric rate study being done this year as you approve in this year's budget. So we've been having some initial discussions with the rate consultant. We're going to provide them with data, and then they should have some recommendations to us sometime by, let's say, mid-year. And then looking at the electric fund target balance, actual compared to target, as you can see there, we are well above our target per policy. The target balance for the elected fund is 60 days of expenditures. Looking at the water fund, water from revenue from sales was 99% of the budget and about a 1% decrease compared to 2013-2014. And I think what we're seeing there is the reclaimed water sales. But that has increased this year, and you're going to really see the wastewater, you're going to see the increase there in the revenue. And on the expenditure side, we were 90.51% of the budget, and then compared to 2013 actual, was about 12% under. And the water fund operating balance was above the target of our policy target of 30 days of expenditures. And as I mentioned, the wastewater fund, you can see there, revenue from sales, actual compared to budget, it's 103.63%, so 3% above our estimate. And then 5.86%, almost 6% higher compared to 2013 actuals. And so one of the major trends behind that is, as I mentioned, revenue from reclaimed water sales. This year has actually increased compared to last year. And then our expenditures right on the dot compared to budget. And then compared to 2013 actual, we were almost 1% higher. And then our operating ending balance, we were above our target of 30 days, which is a good sign for the wastewater fund. And then lastly, stormwater. Revenue from sales was slightly above our forecast, 100.72%. And then compared to 2013, really no much change, 0.45%. Then expenditures were within 95% of the budget. And then compared to 2013 actual, we were 15% below. And one of the reasons that we put more money into capital into 2013. And the operating fund balance is above our 30 days target. So then looking at some of our economic indicators, the general fund revenue source, utility taxes, they're within 2% percentage points of the budget and running higher compared to 2013, both electric, water, and sewer, and also from our garbage and natural gas. The street fund, 1 cent gas tax revenue was 100% of the forecast and no change compared to 2013 in terms of actuals. And again, this is one revenue source we're going to have to pay close attention to because of the Canadian dollar drop as well as gas prices. So we know that this potentially could have some impact. So as we move into the year, get further into the year, we're going to have to closely monitor this revenue source. Then hotel motel tax, which I'm sure the BTAC committee has seen this and is very appreciative of what's happening here, the trends. Certainly much higher compared to 2013, as you can see in this graph, and then compared to our budget estimate, it was almost $13,000 higher. So certainly indicative of the fact that we've got the resort is now up and running and functional. I've heard from Michael the improvements that they've made to it, which is certainly a benefit. The revenue from real estate sales, or REIT, was above the budget estimate, but down about 11% compared to 2013. In 2013, I would call it an anomaly, because that was a big year for real estate transactions, mainly due to the sale of the resort. That wasn't one. But it's still certainly higher compared to previous years. And then lastly, revenue from property taxes was well within our budget and about the same compared to our 2013 numbers. Any questions?
three questions, if I may. Refresh my memory. When I buy something here, I pay a little more than 8% sales tax.
It's 8.5%.
Of that 8.5%, how much actually winds up?
It's a little under 1%.
So we get what's essentially a trivial amount of it.
I'm sorry?
It's almost a trivial amount. Second question, of the sales tax that we get, what percent does come from these mail order operations?
Oh, it's well over 50%, well over half.
Okay. And fortunately, I seem to have forgotten my third question.
Well, if it comes to you, you can always ask me.
I shall.
It is trivial compared to the total amount, you know, percentage of the sales tax, but it's all we've got.
It's all we've got.
It's
exactly.
All we've got.
It's all we've got.
With our,
that's right.
You know, so, seems like this.
Dennis, did you have a question?
Do you have to have the state audit again this year?
No.
Good.
We do not.
It says with
2 years.
Any further questions? Steve. You look like you remembered Paul's third question.
Well, one of the things I was having to look at those figures, Jeff, I was wondering if maybe I could borrow your crystal ball, because obviously you're doing a fantastic job of putting all those figures together. But I will say that watching the Canadian dollar will definitely be important. The ethylene operation in Sumas is pretty much almost completely dried up because of the dollar.
Yeah.
And their gas stations are way down too.
Yeah, and I would imagine that we're going to see, especially Costco, although we don't get any sales tax from groceries. No. But it certainly would have, in that respect, an indirect effect on the community.
And I think even the mail order, if we see it drop to 70 cents, we'll see an effect on that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the industry is positive. Where Border Tire was, that's going to be another expansion of another one of the freight.
Right.
They're willing to pay $5,000 a month for that building.
Yeah, exactly. The benefit with the mail order is that it seems like the items that are purchased are generally, no matter what happens with the Canadian dollar, still less expensive to purchase here in the United States versus in Canada. And there's just some items that can be purchased here that are not available in Canada.
That's right.
As well. So those two certainly.
And some places don't ship to Canada.
Right.
Exactly. Which is, of course, why.
So there's some factors in our favor.
The cost of shipping on the Canadian postal system is currently way up.
Yeah.
Any further questions? Not Jeff, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Administrative services.
So I'm going to provide an update on the City Council vacancy. We provided the council with a schedule of deadlines that we were going to meet in order to fill the position. The first deadline was February 20th for the actual applications. That was last Friday. We received 6 applications. 4 of them have communicated with the county auditor in the elections, and they appear to be fine. There are 2 that I'm still checking on. One of them, I have tried to get a hold of the applicant. The applicant is not within that ward. And the other one, I just need to get some additional information. The second deadline we had was March 2nd for doing interviews. And we were originally planning on doing the interviews and study session on March 2nd, and then at the March 9th council meeting, appointing a council member. Dave has suggested that we do the study session on March 2nd, and then while the candidates are still here, the council can have a special council meeting and appoint someone. And then on March 9th, that person will be sworn in. We'll have the paperwork done. When it's an appointment, we have to have 4 council members sign the certificate. So I've already talked that. And so if it's an edge that, I will contact the applicants for the interviews. We're looking at 4:30 to 5:30 for the actual interviews. And then at 5:30, we can start the special council meeting for the council to make that decision.
So we plan on having interviews with everybody in the room, or we talk to individuals, or a little bit individually privately?
I am going to request that they sit outside until it's time for their interview. Once they've been interviewed, there's no reason that they can't sit and listen to the other interviews, because they've already made their presentation to the council. If that works very well.
Everybody comfortable with that?
Okay.
Just for point of clarification, you said somebody has applied that is not in the ward?
Yes, it appears that that person is located in closer to the Vista Terrace area.
Clearly not in that ward.
Have they been notified that they're not in the ward?
I left a voice message to talk to that person, and that person has not returned my call, so I will follow up tomorrow. Yeah.
Okay. If they can't get hold of them, I'd send them a letter.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And the other person is in the ward?
The other person's in the ward. I just wanted to get some clarification. They've owned the property, but the person is in the military, so was not voting in the area until April. So the question is, when have they been actually living here for at least a year? Because they just have to be a voter, but they have to have resided for a year. And so I'm trying to get some clarification on that.
Yes, Dennis.
There were going to be a series of questions that would be established.
Yes. I'm going to put together a list, provide it to the council members, and then any changes can be made.
It seems like to be in that process that we have a list of questions that we're okay with. We should, like, Harry should just ask the question first, so we can sit and listen to them. And then at the end, if we, as individuals, we have questions, we can ask them. It seems more efficient just to have one person answer and be in charge of the questions and stuff like that. That's just my take. See, from my standpoint, I think it's kind of...
Okay. One of the other things, too, is that whatever questions we provide for the council, I was planning on also getting to the applicant so that they can read them and put together some kind of a response.
Yep.
So we're comfortable doing whatever the council would like.
I'm at the mercy of the council if they wish to have me ask the questions and whether they're willing to do it.
I think that's fine. And then if we have a chance to
everyone can
either
jump
ask,
in,
you know, clarification or even
sure.
a question of our own, you know, if time allows.
Okay.
Harry, we have trouble with multitasking.
No, I understand that.
So, Sherry, do we have 15 minutes per applicant?
Well, let's say if we end up with five applicants, depending on the information we get for that one applicant, we were thinking maybe 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Is that going to be enough time?
I think so.
I guess the thing that I would like to see, and I don't know if it's possible, is to have the information in advance of no, I'm talking about the actual applications.
Oh, the applications, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. We would do that. I'm going to put that package together for you.
We'll have that prior to March the 2nd, an opportunity
absolutely.
To review them and check them out. Okay? That's good.
That's a special meeting.
And it's going to start at 4:30. Everybody comfortable with the 4:30 start time?
I was working in your favor.
I know it. Well, if it's earlier, I'm not going to do this. It
this a dinner meeting or a...
Sure.
We should come before for food. We don't want to be eating while we're listening to them. I don't like that.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
You don't get to eat the last one.
Mr. City Manager.
Well, I just have a great report, Council. Just want to thank Raven for doing such a great job last week. We had a chance to meet with those legislators and had to do with her making those phone calls early. I think a couple of things came out of it. One, we were really able to push transportation for the I-274, which is kept after that. Everybody knew about that intersection. And, we'll just see where it goes. It's an important priority for us. I think the other part of it is the sewer coalition that we joined that Raven mentioned. I think there's quite a lot of possibilities with that for loving things. One thing that we are going to follow up with is I've suggested that we combine at least the water sewer enterprises into one enterprise for small cities, so we can share revenue and share expenses. That, so the water system might be able to have a little bit of support, or the electrical. So we're going to talk about some of those things for the for small cities. I just wanted to follow up on a couple of things. I had a conversation with Clark Cotton today. He misses you all. Well, almost all of you. And, it was so funny because he said, you know, I kind of miss that job. I guess it's interesting. So he's down in Texas doing fine. We had a couple of things to talk about. Economic development, he was interested in knowing how that was going. So it was nice. So you could, the mayor will see Mike Myers sometime.
Yes.
Flags.
Okay.
He sent those up. He gave those to us. And they've been sitting in the list. We did get them up. So if you mentioned that,
nice. Yeah, I noticed that.
We're meeting with the prosecutor this week to figure out what rules we need to change for cleaning the city up. One of the things that we've learned is some of the rules and ordinances may need to be updated. They did some work on that last year. And we just need to make sure I've got it finished up. The most important thing in that, which we'll bring to you, is the penalty. Nothing's going to happen without a steep, deep, painful penalty, which will be controversial as soon as you put it in place and start using it. So we'll talk a lot about that. That's coming up. I'll be following up with Dana from the Senior Center on the Pavilion Project and make sure everything's dialed in with that. A good reminder, I appreciate the mayor talking about the Group Isaac Center presentation on Saturday. That's very nice that we're doing. I think we look forward to that. And the last thing I just want to touch bases on, the article in the paper you read probably about the border crossing and our local business person who lost her visa. It's in the Northern Light. I got notified by Lynn, I think, the day after that happened, that he was hotter than a hornet. You know, that's one of his major areas, is getting visas approved for his clients. And at that time, it was obvious to me that our big push for Blaine development, economic development, the Gateway site, is what Bill Wright would say is our neighborhood, right? Well, that neighborhood has a middle of the crossing, which is very formidable. And so we need to put together a strategy to, I think, let's not, we can't be passive about it. We have to somehow identify what our role is. Obviously, they're Homeland Security, they have a national interest, but that's a very difficult thing for businesses to look at and wonder, am I going to get across the border to serve my business? It could happen to anybody, apparently, for any reason. And this fellow that, and I don't know the person in the paper, but apparently he's been doing business here for 20 plus years. Every 3 years getting his visa renewed, and this year didn't happen. And I did see the paperwork that Lynn had that showed the comments in handwriting that the person that interviewed him didn't think he had managerial supervisory duties. So it's just, you know, kind of beyond the room. So we're going to do something. We're going to find out what we can do, and we'll probably come back to the council and report that before anything happens so we don't miss that. So other than that, I wanted to thank the staff. Lots of reports tonight. Lots of things going on, so I appreciate that. And I'll take any comments or direction if you have any.
Comments? Instruction?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, calendar. We have interviewed the applicants on March the 2nd. Sherry, I believe everyone will be here. Is that true?
That's my understanding.
Okay. And
on March the 9th, we're going to have our regular council meeting, and there will be a study session prior to that. Okay, and then on March the 23rd, we have our second council meeting in March. So everybody comfortable with all that? Is there any unfinished business?
I have a question. Dave, is Mike Hassel, is he working with the emergency coordination in the county?
Is he working with the emergency services?
Yeah.
In what fashion? I think they talk all the time and they do training together. And, you know, the fire department's involved in emergency management. And is there a particular area that you're concerned
about? Well, there was a notice that they're having a work session on the 19th from 10 to 12 for people that were involved with it. And then there's another one, if they can't make that, on the 31st.
Is this directed toward officials like yourself?
Yeah.
I didn't see the notice. We can talk about it. So the answer is absolutely. There's all kinds of training. I think Raven just spent a couple of days in some NIMS training, the National Emergency Management System and State Emergency Management. So there's lots of training that is ongoing. And the county is our primary leader in emergency management. Okay. If you'd like, I can have Mike report at the next council meeting what his and his staff's involvement is. I'd be happy to talk about it.
Yeah, after today's newspaper, they were talking for 15 rail derailments a year.
But that was one. I attended the class on Thursday about that subject, and it is certainly a big and important subject. It has lots of environmental concerns as well as safety. But I got to tell you, after sitting and watching that train go by many times now, I would be worried, and I am worried about chlorine, hydrochloric acids. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff that's on those trains that are very volatile.
Something
we don't even know about this.
But there is 100 or 80 or 90 cars solid that was going by. Yeah. I could move the oil. And the
coal spills, it's not going to damage the environment.
It's coal,
but
the oil.
And the new tanks.
The oil trains all explode.
The new tanks, they have internal valves. So when they do roll off, those valves automatically, if they're broken off, they have internal shutoffs. So that's what's prevents the oil from coming out. The older ones, when it breaks off, they don't have an internal valve. It
apparently
actually breaks off at that surface.
Yeah, instead of the new one, the new car exploded.
There's a danger. 18 cars, trains a day, by the way. Now, to blame.
Thank you very much. We had three of our chiefs go over to the meeting last month, and only two came back. Yeah, so I'll just leave it at that. We finally got them home about 8 hours later. So yeah, the border is an issue, no matter what you're driving or what uniform you're wearing.
Are there a lot of oil cars going back and forth on our rails here along the water now?
Oh, yeah.
Oil cars?
Yeah.
And is there going to be a dramatic increase?
You don't build a pipeline, there will be.
There has been a dramatic increase, and I anticipate there's even going to be more. Thank you very much.
Is that yours?
Are you satisfied with the calendar?
But
I want to see that, Michael.
I don't need one, Michael. Is there anything else that we would like to discuss? If not, I will... Sorry about that, Paul.
For the first time in my life, I have some potential new business. Four of us attended the opening of the Oyster Bar this afternoon before we came here. A topic that came up at that point was the possibility of closing off a one- or a two-block section of the street. Sometime during the summer for food, music, ice cream, just sort of a street party on a Saturday afternoon. What I'd like to ask, if the rest of you agree, is for the Parks Committee to look into the possibility of doing such a thing.
Why would it be a Parks?
Parks and Recreation?
Who else would it be? It would be more of a Parks, I think.
You're referring to allowing a permanent sidewalk stand like that?
No, I'm referring to a one-off, one-afternoon street fair.
Oh, street fair.
Anchored at the Parks on the waterfront.
Mm-hmm.
With if the Oyster Bar were interested in participating, if the steakhouse, if Edelise, mm-hmm. and so forth, music, just kind of a summer party.
We've often talked about you know the importance of events and so forth. That actually sounds like a BTAC topic.
Sounds like a
BTAC. But Public Works would certainly do the permitting that would be required to close any streets.
If it cost money, it would be BTAC. If it could be done with just jawboning, it might be Parks and Recreation Board.
Yes, but it's something that would fall on Debbie's line to see if she could do this. We could get funding involved.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a good idea.
I don't much care who does it. It's mm-hmm. much more an idea. Let's look, take one step further than just saying this would be a great idea.
We only do that once now, don't we, for the, is it the Drayton Harbor Days or the Jazz Festival people? I know there's one time at least that we shut off that block and do that same kind of thing.
That's coming up, isn't it?
But
14?
Drayton Harbor Days.
It shouldn't be in March. It should be in July or August, to be my guess, because of the weather.
Yeah, August is when they have those.
I would think the Chamber of Commerce might have an interest in it as well.
If I might add, we've had multiple conversations about that at a staff level, in particular with the Park and Cemetery Board. I do agree that it is likely something that would involve BTAC. I doubt we can get much of anything done without any funding. But it is we've explored it multiple times, and with some desire from the direction of council, we would be more than happy to look into it. We've talked about doing something like Food Truck Fridays, where every Friday in August we close a block, probably not East Portal Drive because it's too important of a thoroughfare, and basically bring in a movie or bring in a band and bring in food trucks and encourage the local vendors to, you know, participate and do something that's locally oriented. That's a challenge with BTAC funds, but it would be great fun. And it's the kind of thing that brings people downtown and gives people something to do on a Friday night. We want them to stay in Blaine.
Yeah, I think it would be really...
Well, I'm going to be going to the chamber meeting on next week just to give a project update, and maybe that can come up. It would
be a great opportunity for children's things, too, because you could bring in vendors to do face painting and balloons and, you know, make it a fun family. Okay, if there's no other new business, I will bring the meeting to a close at 7:50. Okay, Robinson, now what are you doing?